At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Here are three reasons Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. We use food-grade ingredients. We have a wide selection of varieties. And they all come in two strengths. Find Zyn at a store near you.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Monday morning, March 27th, 2023. That's March 27th, 2023. It's the Beating the Book podcast, Major League Baseball preview. Cannot wait to discuss the upcoming season and all the bets associated with it. It's Gil Alexander with three distinguished baseball gentlemen to my right in studio. First time doing an MLB preview with us. Adam Burke, ladies and gentlemen, at Skating Tripods on Twitter. And for baseball purposes, Adam, would it be fair to say that the nerd baseball community perhaps knows you best, not only from VSiN, but I would even argue from your Bang the Book previews from so many years? Those were and I've said this to you before, I'll say it to this audience, the greatest, as a guy who wrote a lot of MLB previews, I would read and thought mine were great. I would read yours and be like, who is this dude? So happy to have you here, man.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, it was we'll call it a labor of love. I think that's the best way to kind of describe it. But, you know, also it helps me organize my thoughts for betting on the baseball season. So, you know, it's dual purpose, right? Get to help everybody out, but it also helps me out to organize all my thoughts and philosophies and all that.
I couldn't believe the volume, though. You did for all 30 teams, did you? And you'd have a lean or a bet on an over and under. And they were just, I don't want to use the word exhaustive because that has a negative connotation, but they were just so thorough. How long did that take you to complete?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the process from start to finish would be 6 to 8 weeks, depending on, depending on how deep I went. I mean, I used to write them about 4,000 words a piece. The ones I did for VSiN this year, about 2,000.
Yeah.
So I'm working smarter and not harder, but you know, there's just so much that you can get into. But for me, when you look at it from a season win total standpoint, which is what the previews are kind of intended to be, I mean, there's 162 games. There's a lot of stuff you have to cover: depth, prospects.
Yeah.
If a team's going to be a seller at the trade deadline,
seller, buyer.
It takes time and words to get all those thoughts out there.
It do. Speaking of words, Paul Sporer joins us for yet another MLB preview at Sporer on Twitter. Writes for FanGraphs, Sleeper in the Bus podcast, and where are you working now as well, Paul? Where's that?
Out of the park baseball. It's a simulator. It's a video game. Could actually maybe help with some long-term betting if you're into running simulations.
Oh, well, I think it could actually. Twitch.tv/Sporer as well.
That's right.
All right. Still doing that. And you play video games all through the night sometimes. Not maybe all through the night, but
MLB The Show and Out of the Park Baseball. Yeah, I'm not as much of a night owl anymore. I've been waking up early. I got got these multiple gigs running. Got to be available more in the morning, so it's more of a quote unquote normal time. Streams. But every once in a while, I did it for the WBC when there was those 8 games in one day. I did a 22-hour stream starting at 4 a.m.
Oh, man, how great is your life? A life of baseball. Man. All right. Well, happy to have you. And Jason Weingarten joins us from Under a Cloud of Smoke at Spreadopedia on Twitter. You can find him all throughout the VSiN universe as well. Jason, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. How's it going? Sorry I was late.
No, that's all right. We got you. You're on time as far as we're concerned. So let me just start before we get into bets, futures, season wins, any player props. Let me just ask the question, because this audience, we haven't done any baseball, let alone this question, but I think we have to start with
all of these rule changes that are afoot here in Major League Baseball. And Adam, I'll start with you because you just wrote extensively at VSiN.com about this subject. But we have bigger bases, a limit of two engagements or disengagements. Pardon me, I want to get the word correctly, at first base for pitchers. So all of this helped is obviously the pitch clock, 20 seconds when nobody's on base, when runners are on base, 15 seconds when nobody's on base, batters got to be in at the 8 second mark. All of these things designed for the promotion of singles, doubles, stolen bases. They just don't want the game to be homers, walks, and strikeouts anymore. But the question is, and I think this is for all bettors, because there's a lot of casual bettors who are like, oh, I'm not normally excited about the baseball season, but because of these rule changes, I'm excited to see how it will manifest, and maybe there's a betting angle to exploit. What is your best speculation as to what that might be?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack when it comes to the rule changes. I mean, you know, you think about just an automatic strike and an automatic ball, and you look at hitting splits after certain counts, in certain counts, all of that. When those automatic balls and strikes kind of come into play, you know, it could be really good for the hitter, could be really good for the pitcher. We don't know when that's going to happen, so that's a whole lot of guesswork. But, you know, the shift ban is certainly the most interesting one to me.
Which I neglected to mention.
And particularly for a couple of reasons. One being, of course, you know, for left-handed batters that pull the ball, you know, you're not going up there with three infielders on the right side. So it kind of changes your mindset and your mentality. You know, a lot of lefties were like, well, I either need to hit it the other way or hit it over everybody. Now they're going to go back to saying, you know what, I can just pull it through the hole on the right side. Go ahead and take my base hit. So maybe we see fewer guys actually swinging, you know, with a higher launch angle, trying to hit the ball up in the air. So this could actually lower home runs to some degree, I think, which is kind of an interesting angle to look at. But the other one is, when you think about pitchers, and I know that Sporer is definitely, you know, one of the best of the best when you talk about analyzing pitchers, right-handed pitchers that have bad platoon splits against left-handed batters, those are guys I'll look to fade throughout the course of the season, whether it's a team total over against them, a game over, betting the side against them, something like that. Because, you know, I mean, if you've got bad splits against lefties, the shift at least used to help you to some degree. Now you don't have that safety net anymore, particularly if you're a ground ball right-hander. So those are things I'll be looking at, you know, especially early on in the year.
So interesting, and so many different things to think about, like, oh, this could happen, that could happen. Do we all, by the way, betting aside for a second, Paul, I'll throw it to you on this. We all love baseball. And this is the thing. It's like, okay, you're trying to appeal to a generation, or just you're trying to attract new people to the sport. Do we all agree, Paul, that this is all good, right? Like, there's a purist element, I guess, that is still out there, although I haven't really heard it that vocally. But do we all agree here that this, do you agree that this is all good for the game?
Yeah, I think these are positive moves. Get the ball and play more. I mean, just looking at the WBC, which I loved, by the way, I'm a huge fan. I thought this one was an excellent one. I feel like it gets better every time. But just looking at that versus the spring training games and not having the pitch clock, I was already like, pick up the pace.
Yes.
And I'm a diehard, right? I adore baseball. They've got me. It's not, they don't have to worry about figuring out what I like. And I can freely admit that the pace is boring at times and really needs to get going. A 3-2 game should never be 4 hours. Ugh. Never. It's unbelievable. You know, if it's 10-7, the ball's in play a bunch and you got to make some changes because guys are getting their clock cleaned and that game runs for a while, but the pace is good. It's all about pace. It's not the exact time. That's why football's games are all 3.5, 4 hours, not four, but like they're 3.5 hours regularly, but the pace is often better. They can have some pace issues too, but they're saved by replays being such a prominent part. But yeah, they have to improve the pace. They have to make it more exciting because you lose people very easily. And you know, if you're losing diehards, you're not even attracting the people that you're trying to get to, which are the casuals and the more mid-tier fans.
Yeah. If diehards think you need to do this, then you really probably should. Jason, how do you think, what's your best guess on rule changes leading to betting angles that we might be able to exploit?
Well, I saw one of the Mets spring training games earlier or last week now. I think where Lindor was shifted over second base, and it was technically an illegal shift. And his reason for doing it was the team they were playing, the Astros, had been illegally shifting the previous half inning. And they said, well, if you're going to do it, we're going to do it. And it makes me wonder, can you really enforce a lot of this shift stuff?
Oh, wow.
You know, what are you going to do? You're going to tell me not to line up here? Like, are players going to get fined or suspended? Have Have they said what they're going to do if you line up in an incorrect place? Am I allowed to, you know, if I'm not allowed to line up behind second base, can I line up, you know, 5 feet from second base and then immediately run over behind second base when the pitcher starts his windup? You know,
like, isn't that what the didn't they come out with some tweaks this week where they were trying to clarify that?
Yeah. And I think so. It's an automatic ball if the team is lined up improperly, or you can take the result of the play.
Or you can take the result of the play, right?
So it's like the NFL now, we're getting flags and, you know.
Well, the umpire also has to enforce, too. And I think there's going to be different umpires to figure out where they're at and who cares about it more, which I think is something that to keep an eye on. Who's enforcing, who's being more lax, and then maybe that becomes an angle as well.
This is
fascinating. And I wonder, not just with the shift, but for strikeout props. You know, if you get struck out on an automatic strikeout, does that count as a strikeout for a pitcher? Play into betting overs, maybe? I don't know.
I think it has to count as a strikeout for the pitcher, right? Could you imagine if they start doing that, parsing that number? Oh, my God.
No, like phantom strikeouts? No. It'll be a strikeout for the pitcher. And again, that's going back to the umps that are enforcing it. The tighter enforcement guys, if the market doesn't adjust quickly enough to their strikeout numbers, then maybe you start boosting it, or the guys who are more lax, maybe there's an angle to the negative on their strikeout numbers.
But Jay,
if I remember too, I believe there's 10 new umpires in Major League Baseball this year that came up from the minor leagues. So they've been dealing with these rules. So
they're familiar.
Those are the guys that would probably be much stricter than anybody else.
But that is an interesting point, what Jason's making, which is I hadn't even thought about that. What if you just have their daring umpires to enforce it, right? Like, well, let's see if you call this and I'll keep doing it until you do, kind of thing. I want to get to bets, but I don't want to belabor this part too much, but I do want to bring up one other thing, which is, Paul, you and I had this discussion briefly on a numbers game this morning about this. So my theory, my best guess to this question is, okay, well, and I use the Aroldis Chapman thing, which is, think about these relievers, especially the fireballers, taking Aroldis Chapman. How many times in our mind's eye do we remember Aroldis Chapman throwing a pitch? I'll just use him as an example. He throws a pitch, 101, 100 miles an hour, whatever it is. Then he takes a casual lap around the mound, gets ready before he throws his next pitch, and substitute his name with any other, you know, fireballer. And my speculation to that was, these relievers are not going to have enough time to sort of get their wits about them or take a breath to wind up and throw their next 100-mile-per-hour pitch. And so we're going to see, at least, you know, that's my this complete speculation, we're going to see that kind of erode, and that offense will get a boost in a way that it never has before late in games. Now, I said that to Josh Towers, who's played the game and is a VSiN contributor, and he goes, I think you're wrong. I think it's the opposite. I think pitchers will benefit. Paul, you agree with me that your best guess is, no, you could see a lot. You said this morning you could see a lot of lead changes late.
Exactly, especially relievers. And again, I would like to talk to Josh maybe and see if you meant specifically starters or relievers, if he had any split there. Because starters, sure, I could see some of them getting into a groove and being forced into this pace actually working out for them. But with relievers, it is proven that the more time you take in between pitches, the better your velocity can be on the whole. And plenty of pitchers have taken advantage of that. And we're going to have to see them change there. I keep making the equation of it being like when you're idle in a video game and your stamina bar goes back up. It makes sense, right? The more time you take, the more you can kind of unload. Some of these guys are going to have to adjust, and I think that's going to be pretty negative for some of them. Just looking at the pace stat at Fangraphs, you see guys like Giovanni Gallegos, Devin Williams, Kenley Jansen are the three biggest guys in terms of pace. Those are three pretty big stud relievers, two closers and a guy who's in at least in the fireman's role there for Gallegos with St. Louis now that Helsley's the closer. Helsley, by the way, is ninth, and these are flame-throwing guys. I think it's going to hurt the relievers, and I'd like to hear Josh maybe expound on that if he thinks relievers versus starters will be different, because I just don't see how relievers, a certain group of them, aren't going to get hurt by this.
What I love about that is it takes a guy who plays video games and the stamina bar to like provide that insight, which I do think, like, as bettors, I do think that that's where the in-game algorithm might not be up to snuff when the baseball season starts, or maybe even beyond that, where it's like, oh, this could get really out of whack run production-wise later in games. I'm not sure how you feel.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's something that I've kind of wondered about is, you know, the bounce-back ability, average pitch velocity, if that goes down specifically for relievers, Yeah, you wind up with more balls pulled. Again, no shift. You wind up potentially with higher exit velocity because of the correlation between pulling the ball and hitting it hard. You may get, as Paul mentioned, you know, some more lead changes late in games and stuff like that. The other thing that I kind of wonder about too is, you know, we've already seen the Cardinals come out and say that, you know, Ryan Helsley is really not going to work back-to-back days early on in the year. Will we see reliever usage change because, you know, you won't have that same amount of recovery time between pitches? Will managers want to shy away from using guys back-to-back days? If so, we're talking about, you know, primary high leverage relievers. So is that something that may impact, you know, the day after a game? And then lastly, just, you know, in general, sort of looking at, you know, the dynamics of relief pitchers. I mean, will we see a little bit of a drop in strikeout percentage? More balls in play. Obviously, you've got all the stolen, the increase in stolen base attempts and successful steals that we saw in the minor leagues, that we saw in spring training. I know they're not, the guys at the top of the leaderboard aren't all major league players, but, you know, relievers are notorious for not holding runners well. So we could see a lot of chaos late in games.
See, I love this stuff. This is stuff I want to explain. Jason, are you buying any of that, or what's your theory?
You know, I'm more interested in just watching the first week or so myself and kind of drawing conclusions from there. I don't really have much of opinion one way or the other.
That's fair. We're speculating. That's for sure. We're all speculating.
I could see the first five inning folks staying even more committed to their plan to just bet first fives.
That's right. Despite the bigger straddle, they're just like, I want no part of this after the fifth.
Exactly.
Inning. Yeah. Okay. Let's start with, because we got a lot to get to here. Let's just start with futures, either to win the World Series, to win the pennant, American League or National League, or to win a division. Jason, I'm going to start with you. Have you made any bets in any of those markets?
Yeah, you know, I find this tends to be one of the more boring markets with the amount of options we get these days. But I kind of went straight to the top and bet the Astros again. I don't think even with Verlander, you know, losing Verlander, adding Abreu and everything, I think they probably are still the class of the American League, and I'd be surprised if anybody's gonna take them down this year to win the pennant. I like more than to win the World Series, but I'm typically drawn to betting pennant futures as opposed to World Series futures.
Were you able to dive back in at a better number when the Altuve injury struck?
No, it didn't really move much for me. I mean,
it might have moved. It's not full season, so I just was wondering if it had moved enough to intrigue you to double down.
No, and that's the thing, is I don't normally bet short futures for long durations to begin with, but, you know, three and a half, 325 on the Astros to win the pennant, I still think is pretty good when you consider, you know, like if you start kind of going through, well, so who's the second best team in the American League, and you're probably going to be like the Yankees or whatever, but the gap between the Yankees is so big, especially with the pitching injuries to start the year already.
Yep.
Like, I mean, you guys can probably make good cases for other teams in the American League, but make the case why the Astros aren't just head and shoulders above everybody for me.
I don't think you can.
I can't really. I don't like
the Astros, and I'm saying this, you know, keep that in mind. Like, I do not like them, and I'm like, yeah, they're better than everybody. And they added Jose Abreu. I love Jose Abreu. Underrated.
Oh, I think we lost Jason. How underrated of a pickup, I guess, is what he's saying on that. Like,
yeah, how underrated.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry. You agree with that.
Sorry. I think I cut Jason off there. Pardon me on that. But I think he's going to eat in those Crawford boxes and really kind of see what Altuve and Bregman have done with their pull rates, right? They don't have, neither of them have flashy stat casts. So people kind of continue to want to fade their homer totals. I see this in the fantasy market. And I think Abreu is going to get the same treatment, but those Crawford boxes, you just rip it down the line there and you can really eat there. Abreu has shown the ability to be a pull home run hitter back in Chicago. I think he's going to benefit from it even more in Houston. I loved that pickup for them. I also think Bregman's going to have a big bounce back here. He wasn't fully healthy all year last year. It wasn't really till the second half that the wrist really came together. I don't think he's going to get back to 41 unless they put another rabbit ball out there, but I would not be surprised if he's upper 20s, low 30s for Alex Bregman as well. I do think that their team is loaded. They can withstand 2 months of no Altuve. I don't want to say easily, but I think they can do it well enough. I think they can cover the Verlander loss as well and still be the best team in the American League. I agree with Jason on that. Yeah,
the Astros thought aside, because I do get it, it's one of those bets you might want to just have in your account, you forget about it, and then come September, October, you're like, oh, look what I found in my account. I have this Astros bet that I forgot I made back in March. But just generally, because there's going to be some people listening to this who are looking to bet baseball, maybe for the first time, maybe they're newish to baseball. Futures is what, like, you know, people, it sounds sexy to call a World Series winner all this way before the season starts. But with all of these World Series, pennant, divisions, there's so many opportunities over a 162 game schedule. I was talking with Paulie about this morning. There's so many opportunities to get better numbers at different points in the season for all of these markets. And I mentioned that thing before where, you know, the year that the Dodgers lost the Astros in the World Series, I just happened to time it correctly with the Dodgers. They were 16-26, a swoon to begin the season. I got them at 25-1. They didn't get there. They lost to the Astros in the World Series. But there are opportunities like that if you can time it. There are moments, there are some instances where you do have to, you know, you have to be willing to let the train leave the station on some of that, where you're hoping for a swoon to bet it and it never happens. You have to be okay with that. But, you know, like my best bet of all of last year baseball was betting the Atlanta Braves to win the NL East repeatedly, 17 different times at plus money during the month of September. There was no interest in me betting that any time before that. So it worked out that those all cashed, and it was a huge bet for me. But I guess what I'm saying is, just from a timing perspective, we're just sort of doing the futures out of thoroughness. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a mandatory bet at this point.
Yeah, and it's really tough for me to invest in any future until I know a team's getting to opening day healthy.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, for example, I had no interest in the Phillies. I was actually thinking about playing their season win total under, but they already didn't have Bryce Harper, and then they lose a 30-homer dude in Rhys Hoskins. And now they get to a point where they couldn't sign Aaron Nola to a contract extension.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're out of it,
he could be gone
at the trade deadline. Maybe they want to work their way through that and try to sign him long term, but they're kind of coming to a crossroads where they're probably going to decide between Nola or Wheeler. And maybe they should keep both, but they probably won't. Is Nola the odd man out? And if so, does he get traded? So it's really tough for me to invest in a lot of futures before the season. I will throw one out there that I'm intrigued about, that I haven't played yet, but I'm still thinking about it. And it's the Chicago White Sox at 40-1. And I know that there's some anti-White Sox sentiment out there, but first of all, Tony La Russa being gone is huge for this team. It was a toxic clubhouse. He was not a good fit with the way that roster is constructed.
Oh, man.
Complete mess. They had an out, too, because he got the DUI shortly after he got hired.
And, yes.
You know, they still kept him around.
They should have taken it.
They should have absolutely taken it, 100%. But what I really like about them is, so, you know, Paul was talking about Jose Abreu going to Houston and, you know, how he's probably going to wind up having a nice bounce back season. Last year with hitting coach Frank Menachino, it was basically like, hey, just put the ball in play wherever you can. We don't really care where you hit it or how hard you hit it or anything like that. Just put it in play. Well, this year now they hired Jose Castro, who was the assistant hitting coach for the Braves, where the Braves are like, hit the ball hard, hit it in the air. Let's hit for power, drive in runs. Who cares if we strike out? We're going to hit for enough power to overcome it. I do think Chicago has enough pieces and parts to really embrace that offensive philosophy. And look, if you get a bounce back from Lucas Giolito, and it's a big if, that rotation looks pretty good, especially if Clevinger is able to do anything above average this season. I still like the bullpen even without Hendricks. And as much as I'm a Guardians fan and love them.
I was just going to say, and you're a Guardians fan saying all this.
As much as I think the Twins are probably improved, although maybe not by much, that division is probably the most open of any of them. So the White Sox could very well win that division. And then you're sitting on, you know, 40-1 for the World Series where, you know, I mean, their big three in a playoff series, if Giolito bounces back, is pretty good.
Giolito, one of the great Fangraph page bounce backs from one year to another in the history of Fangraph's pages. You like the White Sox for the division, right, Paul?
I do, but I don't mind that 40-1 there either. 40-1 I concur with everything Adam's saying. This team is still remarkably talented. While I do applaud the Abreu move for the White Sox, or excuse me, for the Astros, I don't think it really hurts the White Sox at all, because I'm big on Andrew Vaughn and think he'll fill in perfectly over there at first base and have his full breakout year. Their pitching runs deep, you know, even if obviously there's the off the field stuff with Clevinger and get that figured out, even if he's not really part of it. You're still looking at Cieslin, Giolito, Kopech as a top four. That's pretty good. I know Liam Hendricks' loss is tough. Obviously, all we really care about is him getting healthy and better from the cancer stuff with the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma as opposed to the baseball aspect of it. But I don't know that it's really going to dent them too much. I'm a big Reynaldo Lopez fan. As much as I tried to believe in him as a starter, I knew that as long as he stays healthy, he can go to the bullpen and be a stud there. Looked great last year. I think he can take over that closer's role and barely miss a beat for them. So yeah, I like that ball club for the division and even for the pennant there that Adam's talking, or for the World Series that Adam's talking about.
Jason, so beyond the Astros, did you bet any futures beyond that at this point? And what about season wins? Let's transition to season wins, because you and I have this in common. We used to bet a lot more season wins than we used to. Did you fire in that market at all?
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Yeah, we talked about my favorite season win total last week on air. Marlins under 76.5, 76, 75, all good numbers. I don't see how this number is as high as it is, and I think it's probably five games too high, especially if they start out bad. This is a team that could probably trade some veterans, or you know, trade anybody that's not Sandy Alcantara, and possibly even trade Sandy Alcantara if you know, he's got a good, really cheap contract, all things considered. But, you know, it's the Marlins, and I don't see many situations where things go right for the Marlins. I see a lot of situations where things go really poorly for them. I think once you kind of get out of Sandy Alcantara, it's just not a good team, and there's a lot of, you know, Avisail Garcia is not a major league starter at this point, and he's gonna get, you know, consistent at bats, and this worries me. Like, I'm just gonna take the under and make him prove me wrong.
Any disagreement on the Marlins from either you or Paul?
I took that one too, under 76.5. So I agree with everything that Jason said, and again, I mean, this is a team that, you know, they've been really good at developing pitching, and they have more pitching coming still. But that position player group is just, I mean, it's a patchwork group of random free agents and random trade guys. And like Jason said, I mean, this is a team, but a lot of bad teams are doing this where they're just getting free agents on a 1-year deal, hoping they play well and trade them for a prospect. It's basically like buying a prospect, and they should.
Yeah.
Jason and I were talking about how this is the, like, Derek Jeter walking away from ownership in an MLB team should have said it all. Like, he's just like, oh, these guys have no interest like in winning.
This team sucks.
Yeah.
I love the pitching. I want to be intrigued by them, but it's really tough with the offense, and the up the middle defense is going to be an absolute nightmare with Luis Arraez and Joey Wendell manning second and short respectively. I think that's going to be very problematic, and it's going to hurt the pitching. I want to believe that there could be a rebound for, like, Avisail Garcia or Jorge Soler, but that's wish casting. I don't really see it in the numbers. And so, yeah, that offense is too brutal. It's going to continue to hold back the pitching yet again this year.
All right, Paul, this now we have arrived at the Angels portion of this podcast, which is, you kind of like them in the division at, well, we saw 7-1 on them. And more than that, when we got to season wins, you like the over numbers on the Diamondbacks and the Angels. So you really believe this is the year with Trout, with Ohtani, not necessarily in that order, but two best players on the planet, where they actually get something done.
I do, because I think the pitching is a lot more bankable this year. I thought the Tyler Anderson pickup is solid. I don't think he's going to be as good as he was with the Dodgers, but hey, if things start to go awry, you can drive back over to Mark Pryor and get some more tips. But I'm a huge Reed Detmers guy. Love Patrick Sandoval. I think Jose Suarez is an interesting five. They've got some guys. They've actually have some depth as well if things do go wrong with a few guys. Griffin Canning looks healthy and ready to go. Chris Rodriguez, Chase Silseth, there's some interesting prospects. So I think the fact that the pitching isn't as bad as it's been in recent years is why I can get back in on this team. The hitting has been, you know, they've always had the two megastars there. They don't even need to stay fully healthy. And I'm speaking specifically of Rendon because I love Taylor Ward. He got healthy late in the season and went back on another tear. Renfro and Drury pickups are pretty nice. Logan O'Hoppe at catcher is a really solid backstop. I'm not much for David Fletcher, but as long as he picks it at short, he doesn't really have to hit too much. I think they've got some depth too with Renjifo and Urshela on the bench. Those are solid bench pieces. I really like Gio Urshela when he can be a bench guy. So I think it's a more complete team. It's not just Ohtani, Trout, and Prey. I think they actually have a cohesive unit. That's why I think they can get the over 82.5 and maybe even contend for the division. Won't be easy to take out the Astros, but I don't mind them as an underdog play for the division as well.
And what was your Diamondbacks theory?
Just that they're really good. I think the Baby Snakes got a lot of talent. I think it's a little bit of a lesser year for the Dodgers. They're still obviously an excellent team, but they're not the unbelievable juggernaut that they've been in recent years. They're kind of laying low, it seems, playing some kids this year so that they can go for Ohtani next year. That seems to be the prevailing wisdom. But the Baby Snakes offense is really, really strong. I like that top to bottom. Obviously, Corbin Carroll is going to get his first big year. I thought the Gloris Gurriel pickup was pretty nice there. I think he can get some of his power back. Gabriel Moreno, don't sleep on him. With Carson Kelly getting hurt, Moreno's now going to be the guy. Alec Thomas, not huge on his hitting, but I am huge on his defense and center. So I think that they have a great lineup. They have enough pitching. I really wish they wouldn't re-sign Zach Davies, because that just made it so only one of Ryan Nelson, Brandon Pfaadt, and Dre Jameson could be in the rotation to start. But that's okay. It's a long season. They have reinforcements. They're going to ride out Madison Bumgarner, even though they're not familiar with the sunk cost fallacy, and they probably should just, you know, put him out to pasture. But Gallen, Kelly, Nelson, Pfaadt, Jameson, they have some pitching. We'll see how the bullpen develops. It's going to be something that they're going to have to kind of pick up on the fly. Definitely like them for the 75.5 wins over the division. Again, it's a long shot type of deal where if you want to get froggy with it, for sure. But I definitely like the over for the Diamondbacks.
Adam?
I can't argue with the Diamondbacks one. I didn't play it, but I know a lot of people like them. And I was in my team preview for them over at VSiN.com. I was very intrigued. Not only that, they also fit the new rules extremely well. They are a very aggressive team on the bases. They don't strike out a whole lot.
Big point.
And one of the big things for them is they don't hit for a lot of power. But these rule changes kind of boost the teams that don't hit for a lot of power. I mean, they kind of boost the, you know, the rich will get a little bit richer. But the Diamondbacks now can create a lot more runs and run scoring opportunities without being a doubles, triples, home runs type of team. So that should be really, really helpful for them. One thing I'm thinking about is we're kind of talking here. So Paul likes the Angels. Jason likes the Astros. I bet Mariners over 87.5. I think the Rangers will certainly be better. I mean, their rotation's better than it's been a long time.
I was going to say, we haven't even talked about the Rangers.
By the way, that's my only season win total is I bet over on the Rangers.
So, I mean, like, we all have to bet A's under, right?
Yeah, I guess we do.
Gosh. Like, I mean, in the 52 games that they play against these four teams, they might win 10, 12, maybe.
Jeez.
Like, I mean, it could be that bad for them.
It is going to be rough. You know, this was a team last year with the A's where I was like, maybe they're not going to be as bad. I think I even told Gill at one point this year that I'm like, maybe they're not going to be as bad again. The more I look at it, the more I'm like, nah, they really are. And they're really going with the tank. Usually their previous rebuilds for the A's have been more of like bad, but like kind of normal bad teams, high 60s, low 70s win totals. Last year it was the 60 and 102, and they could feasibly be worse this year. They have no Sean Murphy. I wonder how long Ramon Laureano is for that ball club. You talk about signing somebody for a 1 year to hope to flip. Jesus Aguilar fits that bill pretty well. It's a really bad team.
By the way, my Rangers theory again, just on based on base runs. First of all, based on Pythagorean theorem, Bill James' Pythagorean theorem, they underperformed by 9 games last year based on base runs and sequencing. They underperformed by 9 games last year. So really, they were a team that was sort of, you know, they were a 77-win team in 69 wins, sheep clothing. How many did they win last year?
68.
Yeah, and so then you have DeGrom, and who knows how many games we're getting from DeGrom. That's always the issue. But then you still have that lineup with Seager and Semien and Odalis, and you just wonder, like, how can they not be a viably credible team. Like, how can they not be average? So I went over on them.
I mean, they were 15-35 in one-run games last year.
And that.
Yeah.
So, on top of it, which is a huge
I think the bullpen should be a lot better. Leclerc back healthy. I like Jonathan Hernandez, Brock Burke, Will Smith's whatever, but he's like a secondary lefty. They've got some interesting guys who didn't make the rotation in Cole Reagans and Dane Dunning, who could be nice out of the bullpen, especially Reagans. He's got his velo back. He's a two-time TJ guy. I think he could actually be a monster out of the bullpen. I like him as somebody who could start too, and given the nature of Eovaldi, DeGrom, and Heaney's health, we could see Reagans back in there starting. But yeah, they've got some depth. They've got a lot of interesting talent in Texas. I like so much of what they're doing and definitely agree with them on the wins total. And then again, if you really want to get froggy with it and just have kind of a long shot,
froggy,
you could go for the division winner, even though obviously I agree that the Astros are the cream of the crop there, but the Rangers are plus 850. You could take a shot on them if you really wanted to, but definitely go for them on the wins.
I'm not froggy enough for the division. Jason, was there anything besides the under on the Marlins that you, I know you liked that one the best, but was there anything else?
I bet the Pirates over 67.5 wins.
Hmm.
I can see that.
I mean, the thing with the unders, you know, like maybe the A's are an exception because they're just, you know, obviously horrendous in tank mode. But when you get into the 60s, especially with like 67 and below, you just have no leeway with an under. You know, you can stumble into 67, 68 wins, you know, and be a bad team. But that's just the nature of baseball is, you know, bad teams win games, you know, every now and then. And I just look at their lineup and it's not that bad, especially if O'Neill Cruz takes a big step forward. You know, Brian Reynolds, if he doesn't get traded, that's a nice, you know, combo up at the top. And I don't know how much Andrew McCutchen and Carlos Santana have left, but you know, if they do have something left, and if Cabrian Hayes is as good as I think he is, and he's just kind of a, you know, post hype guy now. He didn't win Rookie of the Year and kind of deliver when he could have. You know, like I start talking myself into this is a 70 win team, and I don't know, like are they? Yeah, you know, they get to play the Cubs and the Reds and even the Brewers. Are they that much worse than those teams in their own division? I don't know. I don't think they're that terrible. They won 62 games last year, so they won 68. I wouldn't be surprised this season.
The thing I worry about Pittsburgh, the Brubaker injury concerns me a lot.
I mean, that guy's not a great way to start the season already. Already one pitcher down, but you know, I do like, you know, Roazni Contreras. I think he's pretty nice. They got Ovadio from Cardinals. I don't know, maybe get some innings out of him. Vince Velasquez is still in baseball, is what I just learned also from that.
I love it.
I'm not sure he'll work out as a starter, but Keller, you know, he added the velo last year. Mitch Keller added the velocity last year and got some results out of it. This year, he's adding the sweeper, the old sweeper pitch, which is taking the league by storm. It's going to give him a swing and miss pitch. I could see a big breakout out of Mitch Keller this year. Ronzi Contreras, as you mentioned, Oviedo. They've got Bednar and Reynolds for now. I like Rodolfo Castro as an interesting bottom of the order guy. Same with Jack Sawinski. They both got some pop. So yeah, the Pirates, nobody's pretending that they're good, but I think they're just a run-of-the-mill bad team, which that means somewhere between usually like 67 and 72 wins. Obviously 67 would put you on the negative there, but anything above that has you over the 67.5.
I think that there's nothing funnier than the random baseball player that you haven't heard of in 3 years, and all of a sudden they show up on the mound one day.
The best.
Like, is that Joe Blanton? Is that Hector Nwesi? Like, who is that out there? It's so great for just an amusement standpoint, let alone a betting if it's like someone like Nwesi. Adam, your favorite season wins.
Yeah, I just want to play devil's advocate for a second with the Pirates because I think one of the big things that was sort of a separator for Mitch Keller last year was his ground ball percentage went up to 49%. And, you know, again, in a post-shift world, it's concerning to me where you had a guy who was better, but largely because he kept the ball on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for Keller, I mean, he did cut into the walk rate, which is definitely helpful, but the Pirates have spent a lot of time working on sinkers with guys because they're just, you know, they treat it like it's still 2003 out there. You know, they're so far behind the times. So that's a little bit concerning for me. And then losing Brubaker, a guy whose advanced stats are always better than his ERA because he struggles a little bit in higher leverage situations, and the defense isn't terribly good for the Pirates. So if you were to give me like a head-to-head between the Reds and the Pirates, who has more wins?
You take the Pirates.
I would take the Reds.
Oh, you would take the Reds.
I like the Reds. Oh. I actually think that they could be a much improved team this year. The big three is great with Green, Lodolo, and Ashcraft, as long as those guys stay healthy. The lineup, I think, is Votto should bounce back, at least to some degree. I think Jake Fraley is going to play fairly well in that park. Will Myers should play very well in that park. So I think that Cincinnati could be quite a bit better. Last year, they had a bunch of injuries. Jonathan India wasn't very good. Joey Votto was out. Again, Votto coming off a major operation in his, you know, upper 30s. So you kind of worry about that. But I think that team is much improved.
Joey Votto holds the record for me of all bet, like the person that I least like to see up when I am fading the Reds or when I'm fading any team in baseball. He's the one, he must be batting like 700 against me in moments where I don't need him to get in. The other guy was Brett Gardner for the Yankees. I was like, oh my God, this is going to go bad.
As for some other ones real quick, I took the Cubs over 77.5. I mean, they kept all the best parts of last year's team and then signed a bunch of proven dudes with track records.
Yeah.
You know, so I like that. Their rotation is much improved with Taillon and then Wisniewski now making the rotation. Bullpen even looks a little bit better, too. I think like a guy like Keegan Thompson, depending on what role they use him in, his stuff could really play up if they use him seventh, eighth inning, something like that. So I think that's just a deeper group all the way around, so I like them. And I know this one hurts you, but one of my other favorites.
I know it's coming.
The Giants under 81.5.
You're banned.
I mean,
banned.
You know, we talk about the Diamondbacks. I like the Diamondbacks too. I didn't play their overseason win total, but I think they could be better than the Giants this year. Ooh. The Padres and Dodgers are still good, but the Giants, again, a team that is really predicated on inducing ground balls, and they are a really bad defensive team.
So yeah, and so this is, you and I got into this a bit. We sort of hit on this the other day. The Giants were able to win three World Series largely because they conformed to their ballpark, right? So a lot of baseball is conforming to your ballpark. Some teams get that, some teams don't. It's like, hey, you know, Panda will be great in this ballpark here in San Francisco, but as soon as you ship him to Fenway, it's not going to work out with the dimension of that ballpark. I really do wonder, like, what's the team that is most prepared for the rule changes, right? Like, we're going to learn what roster construction wasn't ready for this. And who was kind of thing. And maybe there's no way you could be. Maybe you just luck into that when the rules change. But I just think all
Giants
of these
definitely things, not ready, though.
Not ready.
They're not ready for it. Honestly, and this is not a homer opinion, the team best equipped for the rule changes is the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, maybe
they
so.
Have elite defenders all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They put a ton of balls in play. They're aggressive on the bases, and they're very successful when they are running. Yeah, I just think, and I mean, we'll see what Zunino's like behind the plate in terms of cutting down the run game for other teams. But I think Cleveland is probably the best equipped of anybody.
Homer? No, I'm kidding. You're right.
No, he's right. No, he's right. I like Cleveland.
Yeah, you like Cleveland too, Jason.
Yeah, he's on things.
Yeah, I'm just joking when I say Homer. By the way, the other thing, this is too nerdy. This has nothing to do with anything. But I think you and I touched on this too, Adam, in previous segments on a numbers game, which is batting average on balls in play, which for most of our betting lives was always like at 298, 299, which had sunk to 291-ish or 289 or whatever it was, that will go back up to where it used to be probably now?
I mean, I would think so, especially because, you know, and it's tough because I've seen a lot of people I respect, like Mike Petrello and some of the others out there talking about, you know, well, this player had X hits taken away by the shift, or we would expect this many more hits. That's in a vacuum. That's fine to look at highlights and like batted ball data and all that kind of thing. But like, I've seen Josh Bell, the Guardians' new acquisition, on multiple social media things where people are like, oh, what are you most looking forward to this season? He goes, there's no shift. Like, lefties now can just go up there and go, I'm just going to hit the ball hard and pull it.
Right.
Like, it's going to change their mindset completely to where, I mean, left-handed batting average on balls in play is going to be much higher than we've seen over the last 6-7 years as shifts got more and more frequent.
I'm just going to say, because just stuff pops into my head, but like, I'm just thinking, Paul, if you had a son, right? And then you had to explain, maybe you had a daughter who loves baseball, and you had to explain to your child, let's say you like tell them about this. Oh, there was a time where there was this thing called a shift allowed. And so like, isn't their response going to auto be, well, like, didn't these players just bunt it the other way? Like, what will we look back on as, isn't that the biggest headline of all of this?
Yeah, I will say that bunting isn't really that easy, though. And yeah. So,
okay.
And they didn't train for it, and yeah. You're trying to bunt 100 mile an hour pitch, and what happens if you miss it and you bunt it back into your teeth? So, like, I understand, like, hey, it's all this wide open space, just hit it over there. It's a lot easier said than done, even for the professionals. If it were that easy, they would have done it. Right. Like, I think it's one of those things that's, you know, the old Occam's razor. The obvious answer is probably the right one. It's just not that easy to do it. And so that's why we didn't see as much of it. And now we're going to see these restrictions on the shift, not an outright shift ban. I'm interested to see how teams are going to change it, too. Are they going to move an outfielder over?
Right.
And then still try to play it? Like, certain teams are probably still going to try to play similarly. I still agree with Adam, though, that we're going to see lefties get more base hits. We should see that BABIP go up. 292 in 20 and 21, 290 last year, as you mentioned, after living in, like, the 298 to 300 range for, like, ever. So hopefully we get more hits in play. That is the goal of this, and I desperately want to see it.
And I will say, this is probably a discussion for another day in a different show, but, you know, we talk about these rule changes, kind of bringing casuals to the game, maybe making it a little bit more exciting. One of the things that really holds baseball back and really pisses me off is when you get the ex-players that talk about how much better the game used to be or get up on a soapbox about hitting. And I'm going to go ahead and put him on blast here because I don't really care.
That's never annoying when they do that.
So Rick Manning, who's the color guy for the Guardians.
Former catcher for Cleveland.
84 weighted runs created plus for his career, by the way. So, you know, obviously, you know, very very accomplished in terms of talking about hitting.
What's his career war? What do you think?
6.6.
Yeah.
But he's always talking about, well, you know, you hit it where it's pitched and hit it the other way. And it's like, dude, when you were playing, like, the average fastball velocity is like the average the average slider velocity now.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Try hitting 98. Like, no one threw 98 when you were playing. Hitting is hard. I watch, like, pitching ninja clips and all that, and I'm just like, I don't know how anyone ever gets a hit. Anyone ever hits a home run. It's incredible. And so that's my rant.
And just it was a good rant. And think about then if you get to, like, the all-time greats, like how Bonds could just hang out for the one pitch that came his way. Yeah. He's like, now I see it. Let me smack this out of the park.
Or you get A-Rod, who's hit, you know, over 600 home runs, talking about the values of bunting while he's doing color on a game. It's just, it's nauseating.
It was the same as, like, Morgan being anti-Moneyball when the Moneyball principles, specifically the original Moneyball principles, which was OBP driven. That's not all Moneyball means. It means exploiting the hidden markets, but would have made him even more appreciated. And he was appreciated. He was a 2-time MVP, part of the Big Red Machine. But if people had given a crap about OBP in his era, Morgan would have been arguably the best player in baseball for a period. And he was always crapping on Moneyball, looking so stupid.
Yeah. Well, a wonderful person by all accounts, Joe Morgan was. May rest in peace. The thing about this, though, that this triggers another question. Do you think now, okay, so let's say the rule changes accomplish what they're supposed to and the run environment grows. Do you think there will be then the groundswell of analytics completely ruined baseball with, you know, diminishing stolen bases and all that? Like, that will be their epitaph on it.
It might be, and it might not be 100% wrong.
Right.
The nerds did kind of ruin the game a bit by being too efficient, right? And I'm pro nerd. I'm pro analytics. You know, when I'm playing out of the park baseball, I run all the same stuff. I do the playing time manipulation and stuff. So, like, I'm pro labor when it comes to the real world. But then I get in the game and I'm like, yeah, no, you're going to go down for 2 weeks and then I'll call you up. I got to get that extra year. So it's like, I get it. But yeah, it might be right. Like, the game is almost too efficient at this point, and they haven't really found a way to lower the strikeout rate, which is the biggest single issue, is that there's just too many strikeouts. And I think the clock is going to be the best way to do that. And it might put a little bit of a pushback on stats and analytics. But the real answer is, stats and analytics are not new. It's just that they have names for them now that people think, like, oh, you know, this is such a new thing. It's like, well, not really. They've always been, especially in baseball, they've always been studying stats, trying to find inefficiencies and trying to make things better. But now that it has a name and it has a face, it's easy to kind of hate on.
Okay. So I want to get to the good stuff, because Jason's got a lot of individual stuff I want to get to. Last question about, because we talked about, and Jason pointed out how, you know, even the worst teams often figure out a way to win 60, 65 ball games, right? Yep. That's just how baseball is generally. There's obviously exceptions. What about the top of baseball? We've talked about for the recent years, we've talked about how that the increasing chasm between the haves and the have-nots. And we have these teams, you know, that had season win totals north of 100, and it was just, you know, but we're not seeing that quite in the same way this year. So do we feel like that has reached its peak and that now it's a bit tamped down at the top as well this year?
I mean,
I do think.
Go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, Adam. No, you go.
So I don't know. I mean, obviously from a win total standpoint, you know, you're seeing kind of the top of the market being in the mid 90s,
yeah,
which maybe speaks to parity at the top of baseball. It could also be a little bit of uncertainty in terms of, you know, again, you're losing six games against every division opponent.
It's hard to win 100 games.
So if you're in a bad division, then, you know, you kind of pad your record. Cleveland's notorious for doing this. You pad your record against the bad teams, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now you're going to have to play everybody. So you're not going to run into as many bad teams. I mean, I guess to some degree you might, because, you know, you lose six games against somebody, but maybe you get three against the A's and three against the Nationals that you wouldn't have got, you know, something like
that. Yeah, if the schedule breaks. Yeah.
Right. But I think that, you know, you also run into a scenario where I think there's just maybe a greater dispersal of talent across Major League Baseball, especially in terms of young talent, that's kind of giving some of these teams that are sort of in the middle of the pack a little bit more of a shot. So I think that you kind of have to lower the ceiling for the top teams, because the middle tier teams, I mean, look, it's not out of the realm of possibility that we get four teams that are 500 or better in the AL West,
right,
or in the AL East. You know, something like that.
That new balance schedule that Adam's referring to, 13 games against division rivals, totaling 52 games. Each team will play six games against six opponents and seven games against four opponents in the same league for a total of 64 games. And then each team will also play 46 interleague games, including, by the way, opening day, right? The Giants and Yankees. That's the first game out of the box. I'm like, wait, is this an exhibition game? No, it's a real game to start things out. So,
yeah, I'm fine with that too. You know, obviously, interleague's been around for a while now. I don't mind that it's kind of the whole year when it used to be kind of set off into the summer. It's fine to have it all the time. But yeah, I think when there was that chasm, it was because there were so many teams kind of in a rebuild stage. Some of those mid-tier teams, like Adam was hinting at, are starting to get good. I think his Guardians are one of them. We saw them take a big step forward last year. We've talked up the Rangers a good bit in this episode. We've seen the Mariners take steps forward, made the playoffs last year. The Orioles took a big step forward last year, and we'll see if they can keep that momentum or if they have a regression before they jump up again. We'll kind of see with them. But yeah, I think we're starting to see some of these mid-tier teams get things put together. I think the Cubs poised to take a step forward, the Diamondbacks. And so it is cutting some of that. There's still some very, 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 very bad teams with the Nats and the A's. Specifically, I think the Rockies remain pretty terrible as well. But the upper tier teams, and I even mentioned it with the Dodgers, they're still excellent, right? Like, nobody's going to deny that they're excellent. But are they that unbelievable powerhouse that they've been in recent years? I don't think so. When you look at that lineup, it starts to get a little bit beatable at the mid-tier point there, unlike previous years where you had, like, you know, excellent guys hitting 7, 8, 9. This year, at least it's penciled in right now in roster resource to be Trace Thompson, Miguel Vargas, and Miguel Rojas. You know, that's pretty run of the mill. I like Miguel Vargas, nothing against him. Thompson had a good year last year, and Rojas is a capable major leaguer, but that's not what we've been seeing out of the Dodgers. I think their rotation depth has also died down. So yeah, I definitely think that the gaps have closed, and it's made it so it's not as much of a haves, have-nots type of league.
Okay, last portion of this podcast, I want to focus on individual stuff, awards and player props and all that. But and part of the reason for that I like this more than anything is because, and I was making the case, you know, by the way, Mets fans, you know, like Jeff Parlay, was lamenting this last year as well with me, which is I was making the case, and I took some incoming for it, that baseball is the most two seasons within one season of all our sports, right? So it's, you know, it's the stats by Lopez stat, which is in the NBA, like 80% of the favorites get through to the next round. A lot of that's because of the first round is such a huge disparity between the good teams and the bad times. But to have that same percentage manifest in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you'd have to, instead of playing a best of seven, you'd have to play a best of 51 in hockey for 80% of favorites to get through. It's that random. Baseball's even more random. You have to play a best of 75. So you literally, you play 162 games. You play the longest regular season to establish really who are the better teams and who are not as good. And then you get after the longest, most, you know, most really foundational regular season. Then you transition to the most random of postseasons. So in many ways, betting on pennants and World Series is just, it's a Billy Beane thing. My shit doesn't work in the postseason. Yeah. It's the betting equivalent where it's like, okay, well, I can tell you who might win the division, but I can't tell you shit about who's going to win the whole thing because it becomes random. So the individual awards become that much more interesting. And Jason, you've made a lot of these bets. Can we start with MVP, what you've bet so far?
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Yeah, let's see. Let me pull it up real quick. You want to start with the AL or the NL?
Well, let's start with it however you want to do. Let's start with the AL because I know the NL, you have a juicy one coming up that you want to mention, but what's AL?
So for the AL, unfortunately, I did not bet on Shohei Ohtani.
For the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to, and you know, it's very tempting to just, you know, dump a bunch of money on Ohtani again, but it's 2-1. It's just not exciting. Like, he probably will win the MVP. He should win the MVP. Like, you don't need me to explain this over and over again, but I can't bet 2-1, especially not for, you know, tons and tons of money.
Well, yeah. And does he get traded? And if so,
he gets traded midseason to the Dodgers. Yeah. I mean, and I have asked, you know, can I get Ohtani to win the NL MVP? But no one will give me that bet.
I love that you asked that, by the way.
That'd be kind of fire.
Love.
So I think, you know, like if you're looking to put some money where some players could actually produce, I mentioned, I bet Vlad Jr., you know, kind of what have you done for me lately?
We kind of forgot about
him. Kind of gets no credit.
Yeah.
I love Yordan. I love Jose Abreu. He's still available out there, 100-1 or so. I think that's a little bit more of a long shot, and there's a bunch of challenges there. Then the other guy I took is Randy Rosarena, because there were 250-1s, 300-1s, there was even a 500-1. He looked so good in the WBC, and I think, you know, I love Wander Franco, but it's not crazy to say that Rosarena is the best player right now on the Rays. You know, obviously,
100% correct.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one of my criteria for betting MVPs is you have to be the best player on your own team. You know, otherwise, you know, that you just don't even get off the ground.
Besides
Rosarena is my long shot there.
What was your number?
250, 300. The 500, I think, was negligible. So we'll call it 250 and 300.
And Vlad was in the teens?
Yeah, Vlad was like 14-1 or something.
And Yordan also, I think, was around there?
Yeah, Yordan, I think, was 11. I'm less excited about Yordan because he just started swinging the bat, and it's always something with him. You know, like, like, we know he's good, but could he play 150 games, or, you know, are we going to see 125?
Well, and will he end up having to DH? Will Yordan Alvarez have to DH a big chunk, which will undercut his WAR? You know, he played 77 games there last year, and if you get the wrong electorate, I say wrong in this instance specifically, if you get a real nerdy electorate, the electorate moves around every year for each award that really loves WAR, it's going to hurt somebody like Alvarez, even though he might have just the gaudiest offensive numbers. I mean, he had 185 WRC plus last year, which is incredible. He could do that again for 150 games, but if it ends up being like a 7 WAR and somebody goes 9-10 WAR, it's going to be hard for him to win if he doesn't get a bunch of old school guys voting for like homers and RBIs type of deal.
Well, and somebody also wanted to mention, since Jason talked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., You talk about tailoring your team for the ballpark. Well, now you get to a point where you're tailoring the ballpark for your team. Baltimore did it.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden, like, I mean, they did it for John Means, and then John Means misses pretty much all of last year, but it helped everybody in that Orioles rotation. The thing about Vlad, and maybe his price should be a little bit lower, right center field is like a joke now at Rogers Center. I mean, they moved it in a ton. And obviously, Vlad's a right-handed hitter, but you talk about guys that can drive the ball oppo. He's very high on the list. So that's a guy who's probably going to get a boost offensively. The Blue Jays in general should get a boost offensively from the park factor changes. So just want to make sure we work that in, because, you know, if it's not enough that they change the rules, now you got ballparks with different dimensions. And of course, we still don't know which baseball will be in use this season either.
Exactly. Or what times of year it'll
be. Yeah. Yes. I wish they would tell me, hey, like mid-May, we're going to change the ball
that's
again.
That's the best. Hey, you know what? We're going to go dead ball.
It's insane.
Now. Oh, God.
Only sport where that happens. Just imagine, like, they took PSI out of an NBA basketball midseason. They were like, just deal with it.
Yeah, see how this works. Jason, NL, because I know these fall under the category of really obvious, and I'm surprised it's not shorter to super long shot.
Yeah, so I ended up, I think I have three bets here after not really having any about a week ago. First one, pretty obvious after watching the WBC, is Trey Turner. Got 14-1 at Circa on my way out of town.
I gotta get one.
I like Trey Turner. I think he's coming in hot to start the season, and with Bryce Harper out for an extended amount of time, you know.
And the rule changes are perfect for him.
Yeah, he's a $300 million shortstop. That's MVP money, you know, go out there and win an MVP kind of thing. So I was happy to get double digits there, defending World Series runner-ups, whatever. The second one was slightly unusual and doesn't necessarily check one of my most important criteria as best player on your own team. It's Matt Olson, who's on fire to start the spring. You know, couldn't be hotter. I don't recommend necessarily always reading too much into spring training stats, but you know, you can take notice when a guy is absolutely mashing like Matt Olson has been. The risk here is, you know, I've seen as high as 30-1 actually still available. Low as 20. Wouldn't play it below 20-1. But obviously, the main problem here is, you got Austin Riley, Ronald Acuna, forgetting somebody else who's also a contender. But you have, oh, Michael Harris.
Michael Harris.
You have so many guys who are elite players that sometimes it, you know, it's hard for one player like that to win the MVP on his own team. But I did take notice Olsen's been on fire, and I bet that. And then my long shot, the one that, you know, people are expecting but probably not expecting, and it's going to seem obvious after I explain a little bit, is O'Neill Cruz.
Let's go.
At 125-1, at 100-1, I think a lot of books opened him very high, on the very high end. Circa opened him 33-1, so I was kind of impressed that they kind of see some of the same things I do here.
Or somebody bet the hell out of him there.
No, that's what it opened at.
Oh,
it opened.
Really?
And as far as I could tell, because of the order where he was, it was much lower.
Wow.
But the thing with Cruz, and I might be a year too early. I tend to be a year too early with a lot of this stuff. But he's 6'7". You know, he already holds the Statcast records for the hardest throw, the hardest hit. We know he's a monster. He's got the 29.9 sprint speed, feet per second. You know, he can cover ground that other players can't physically, you know, and that means more outs, that means, you know, more total bases, it means all sorts of things if he stays healthy. You know, he is a physical freak and there's no other player like him. Every time he plays, like, you hear crazy numbers pop off, like how hard he throws to first base, and obviously those things don't necessarily win you MVP. But the highlights on an even potentially bad team, it'll put him on TV and on MLB Network and on ESPN, you know, nightly if he's healthy and he's performing. Strikeouts will always be an issue with him. But he's got the potential to be a 30-30 kind of guy, a 40-40 kind of guy, especially with the bigger bases. And, you know, if he plays to his, you know, highest projections and the Pirates outperform just ever so slightly, you know, and they win 70 games, I don't see how he's not an MVP contender at the very least, especially at 100-1. Like when you look around the board in the National League and you see like Kyle Schwarber's 40-1. I love Kyle Schwarber. I'm not betting Kyle Schwarber at 40-1. You know, I'm trying to think. Oh, Fernando Tatis. I've told you how little I think Fernando Tatis has the chance to win the MVP. He's like 11-1. You know, it's terrible. So give me O'Neill Cruz all day at 100-1, at 125-1. You know, at least, you know, I know it's a long shot, but at least I know he can do something.
I totally hear you. I love it. I may even end up with a ticket, but like I can already hear it. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, right? Because you alluded to it, which is, remember like when our Juan Soto 100-1 fell, you know, in second place, what was the nod? It's like, ah, oh, well, he plays for the
Nets. But he was on was a very bad team.
Yeah.
I mean, this could be a very bad team as well. Like I said, I'm not expecting it to, you know, immediately be a contender out of the gate. I'm just saying that at the odds relative to some of the other guys who are also 100-1, he's the only guy I saw at 100-1 that I had any interest in backing.
Yeah. By the way, how about that Nats team that had Turner and Soto and Strasburg?
It's not that long ago.
Yeah, and like, and the fact that like it was an amazing bit, like people were like, wow, you really stuck by the Nats because they were fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As time has told us, you guys can, Adam and Paul, chime in whenever you want on these. If you guys have your own MVP plays, have you made? Because mm-hmm. Jason, do you have some? Yeah.
Yeah. I like Pete Alonso plus 1500 right now, that I saw. You probably get it a little bit better if you shop it. Like, you know, the Mets obviously already been dealt a blow with Edwin going down, but still a wonderful team. I still think that he's got like a 60 home run season. We saw with 60 plus homers, the AL record, like anybody gives a fuck about the AL home run record. Shut up with
Thank
that.
You. Thank
still
you.
Think it should have been Ohtani, but you know, you put up a gaudy number like that, it's going to draw attention. Pete's already gone over 50 once in his rookie year with 53. He can chase down mid 50s, low 60s. For sure, and that would put him in contention. And I hinted at loving Bregman for a bounce back, and I feel like he could put up an MVP-type season as well. Probably would require him to get back to some 2019-level homers maybe, but even I think in the low 30s he can do it. He'll be on base at like a 420 clip on a great team, 100-100 in the runs and ribbies. I definitely think there could be something there with Bregman. I like his number for MVP as well.
Okay.
Oh, I have one more. Sorry, I have
please.
A long shot.
Yeah, please.
Eloy Jimenez for the White Sox.
Oh.
It all comes down to health with him, right? The talent is unquestioned. Now he will face some of the issue I talked about with Yordan Alvarez being a DH that could hurt him in the war component, even if he's putting up crazy numbers. But if you get to a certain level with the offense, it draws just enough attention that he can overcome that. Got to stay healthy, though. That's the biggest issue. I mean, that's an issue for Alvarez, too, but he's stayed more healthy than Jimenez has. We've only seen him go over 100 once, but if he gets the 145 games, I think 40 with a 300-plus average, tons of runs and ribbies are very much in the cards for Eloy Jimenez, and he's plus 8,000.
I believe it was someone smart who once said, staying healthy is a skill. I believe that's
absolutely
Paul Spohr's great comments from years gone by. Jason, you bet, if we're all done with MVP, anybody can chime in, you bet Jordan Walker to win National League Rookie of the Year, and you moved, I'm going to say you did it. I think I'm pretty confident that you did it because of appearances in media and on the numbers game. You moved the line on this. He is going to start opening day on the roster. Is it too short to bet Jordan Walker at this point? What number did you get him at? Where is it now?
Yeah, I got like 14, 11, 10.
Yeah, it's too short now then. For
too
sure.
short now, 3, yeah. 4. Wouldn't,
yeah, it's way too short.
Yeah, yep. Still got a lot of things have to go right to win. But, you know, obviously the big number that existed at the beginning, I was always pretty confident that he would have the opportunity to make the opening day roster. So, you know, that's where the price difference basically comes from. But as far as the market now, I think the thing I always tell people when you look through this market, the first thing you mostly can do is throw out most of these pitchers. We saw Spencer Strider couldn't win last year with such a spectacular year, over 200 strikeouts, just dominating performances, and got second place to his own teammate. So
yeah,
I'm not interested in almost any of these pitchers at the market numbers. You have to give me, 100-1 or something crazy to get me to consider pitchers this early.
By the way,
obviously in the AL, Gunnar Henderson and Anthony Volpe now making the Yankees. He's going to be super popular. It's hard to really find a lot of long shots with, Masataka Yoshida, another guy in the AL who's, coming in real hot off the WBC, going to be batting leadoff for the Red Sox.
I would tell they're going to bat him four.
Oh, they're going to bat him fourth? I thought they were batting a leadoff.
There was some chatter about him batting four. Either way, it's still good, by the way.
Either way, yeah, he gets, meaningful at bats. It's hard, the last couple of years, a lot of the Japanese guys haven't produced, their rookie seasons. I can't really back them here at like 4-1 or 5-1. I've seen as high as 7-1. It's tough. Like I couldn't rightfully tell you that there's a good bet out there right now, a value bet in the AL MVP the AL Rookie of the Year race to open it up.
I got one for you.
Okay. What do you got, Paul?
Yeah. So what's yours?
I got Josh Jung, JUNG for those unfamiliar. It looks like Jung, but it's Young, with Texas, kind of going with our theme that Texas is going to be an interesting ball club. He came up last year coming off the injury, got out of his rhythm a little bit, and was just kind of swinging for the fences. It worked for some power, but he swung and missed too much. I think he's going to have a huge rookie season here, something where he's hitting like in the 260s, mid-20s homers, plenty of runs and ribbies, good OBP. I think Josh Jung is an interesting guy out there. I see him at 20 at DraftKings right now. You can definitely shop that around too, probably get upwards of 25 depending on where numbers are right now.
I feel like I've lost more, anecdotally, more rookie of the year bets than anything ever in my life.
They're really tough.
Yeah. Great moments in rookie of the year betting history. Jason had me go to the Westgate back in the days when I used to walk into that place and get a number for Casey Mize, your boy Casey Mize, Paul, who was playing for the Tigers. And they made a number for us. It was 200-1. So we bet Casey Mize. And right next to Casey Mize was Yordan Alvarez at 200-1, which was ignored. Yeah, I think, Jason, you ended up with a bet on Alvarez as well, but I ignored the 200-1. But yeah, that's a great moment in Rookie of the Year history. All right, we have 5 minutes because we have a hard out here. Anything Cy Young from anybody? Jason?
Yes. I bet Luis Garcia is still available, like 70-1, 80-1. I got 200 at FanDuel. I liked him. I think he's got a lot of playoff experience, and he's looked good every time I've seen him, and pitching for Team Venezuela and high leverage in the World Series. I think he's a contender on a team with other serious contenders. And I bet George Kirby at 65-1. He's another guy I might be a year too early on, but I thought 65 was on the high end compared to, some of the guys up top. But these are the kind of markets where when you got DeGroms and Verlanders and guys like that, you're always, your decision is either to back a favorite or to fade the favorite here.
Paul?
Yeah. I start hunting, and I like, this is more still in like the secondary favorite tier, but I like Luis Castillo first full year in Seattle, getting out of Cincinnati. We saw him pitch really well down the stretch in the playoffs. He's at 17 right now at DraftKings. I think he could absolutely be a monster. He's shown Cy Young capable stuff before. I think he can put together that entire type of season and have a huge run. So I definitely like him. That's a great rotation there with Kirby, Castillo, Gilbert, former Cy Young winner, Robbie Ray. So yeah, I like Luis Castillo quite a bit.
You steer clear of these, don't you?
Yeah, I don't do a whole lot of player award stuff, but I will say I do like Jason's pick of Kirby. I mean, he gave up 12 homers in his first 64 and a third last year, gave up one home run in his last 65 and two thirds with over a strikeout per inning. So that rotation is a big reason why I'm really high in the Mariners. I like their depth in general, but that's one of the big reasons why I like their overseason win total. The only one, and it's not a sexy price by any means, but again, I'm overvaluing what the shift band means to ground ball types of guys, but Christian Javier is not a ground ball guy. and he's got a very high strikeout rate. I think he's probably the best pitcher in that Astros rotation. So it's only 18-1 in a place like DraftKings. I'm sure you can shop around and find better, but that's about the only one that I kind of entertained in the Cy Young market.
Did we exhaust the awards? Did everybody get in their awards best? Because I have one last question.
Or
one
Josh more Altman for the NL Rookie of the Year is kind of interesting. Or James Altman. He made the club. I talked about how they're going with some kids this year. He strikes out a ton, but if he's playing all year, I think there could be a little something there. It's a longer shot there at 40, so I could be interested in James Altman for the Dodgers, NL Rookie of the Year.
Jason, any others?
No, it basically covers it. I think Altman's interesting. Corbin Carroll's the guy that's going to burn the Jordan Walker bets and the Altman bets and everything. This is a year where the rookie markets are top heavy with Henderson and Corbin Carroll and Walker. So don't be surprised if a favorite wins this year.
Did you do anything with player props? Most homers, most RBIs, most hits, most wins, anything like that this year?
Yeah, I have a couple. Do you want to hear mine?
Real quick. Yeah, we got about a couple minutes here.
All right, give me 1 second pulling them up. I bet there's one offshore. I think it's bookmaker prop. Ohtani more home runs than Fernando Tatis at like 147. I thought that was a good number. I have Christian Walker over 27.5 home runs minus 110. Yoshida over 15.5 home runs minus 120. And Shohei Ohtani over 12.5 steals minus 120. I thought that was short. I have Marcell Ozuna over 20.5 home runs. I think that's short based on how much he should actually be playing. And I have Hunter Green most strikeouts 28-1. I think he's a contender for striking out the most guys.
Glad I asked. No Seager most home runs. Did you bet that or no?
I do have some of that. I just don't see it on the account I'm reading bets off of at the moment. But I have bet some Seager. You know, I can't quit him.
I can't quit Corey Seager either.
I got Seager and Semien on the hits leaders 50 and 55 respectively. I think Seager especially, I really like him, but I don't hate Semien either. Sandy Alcantara plus 22-1 on strikeout leader. Obviously the volume's there. I still think he has strikeout stuff. He could take a step forward with his strikeout rate, and then paired with the volume, he could easily lead. And then we mentioned Carroll and Rosarena earlier, both of them as stolen base leaders at 15 and 18, a little bit shorter, but I think both of them can have huge SB totals this year.
Yeah, Garrett Cole leading all of baseball in strikeouts last year with 257. Because there are some props out there. Will someone have 300 strikeouts? Will a team get 100 wins? So some fascinating stuff that's available to bet here 3 days before the actual season begins. And by the way, when you were mentioning Randy Arosarena, I was just thinking about him. He was like, you know, styling and profiling and making, you know, just showing his emotion during the World Baseball Classic, making that catch, posing, signing the autograph. I honestly wish we had more of that in Major League Baseball. I don't think that's happening, though, is it? Like, that's the one last vestige of, well, we'll change the rules, but God forbid we change the culture of this.
You've seen some of it, but then some pitchers' feelings still get hurt. Yeah. It's lame. But I like that there's still pushback for it, because it is the way the game should be. I do think that you should be able to show the flash that you want and not be feeling threatened that someone's going to throw a baseball at you like a little baby. I hate that crap from the old school too. Bob Gibson would throw a baseball. Well, he's a bitch made loser then. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to hype up old school pitchers throwing. Like, I love Bob Gibson. He was awesome.
Yeah.
But one of the things that was super bitch made was that he would throw baseballs at people that had success against him. Well, that is weak as fuck.
I think we got to end it on that, Paul. Bitch made. Dude, y'all got
bitch made Bob Gibson.
Bitch made Bob Gibson. appreciate it. Skating Tripod, Spreadopedia, Spore. It's Adam Burke. It's Jason Weingarten. It's Paul Spore. Thank you all so much. You got me pumped for baseball. We'll talk many times this baseball season. Appreciate it, y'all. Thanks so much. And good luck
with guys.
All your bets season long and during the season as well. So many opportunities. Thanks for listening. Good luck.
The cat sat on the mat.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.